everybody, and welcome to Tapped into Psychedelics. I'm your host, Adam Tapp, and with me is my friend and producer, Handsome Jason. And on today's show, our guest is Sherry Bordege, and she is a Canadian Armed Forces veteran. And, you know, we've been talking for quite a while now. I'm really excited about this conversation. And how are you doing, Sherry?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. The technology managed to work itself around so that we could have this little interview today.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, we've been having conversations, and you're a Canadian Armed Forces veteran. You've undergone a lot of various types of trauma throughout your career and the process of working through it. So let's just kind of start at the beginning, and let's just sort of talk about your career. You know, you had told some things about your childhood. You can get into that, whatever depth that you like. And let's just sort of get an understanding of sort of how you got to the place to need the level of healing that you've managed to achieve.
Yeah. Well, first thing I'd like to say is that it was a long journey to get to where I am currently. I'm happy to be in the space that I am right now. But my journey started like quite some time ago, and I'm just going to start with my career in the Canadian Armed Forces. And then I'll traipse back to the things that compounded the trauma that I endured in the Canadian Armed Forces in the ranks. But I'll start with when I joined, and I went through Cornwallis, and I went to in 1991, just before it closed. I joined before Human Rights, and I'm a cis female, and at that time, it wasn't a very welcoming environment, to say the least, to women in particular. I'm a vehicle tech, so less than 0.5% of women in my trade at that point. So I was definitely in a non-traditional role, definitely male-dominated, definitely a little bit of Lord of the Flies happening at that point in our history. It was before human rights were instituted, so there was a lot of things that went on unchecked and that were acceptable behavior that today would be considered shocking. So when I joined, I had a lot of issues and traumas around violence, and particular sexualized violence, because I was a big, bright, 5'2" target. And, you know, so I suffered a lot of trauma, but I stayed for 21 years. And I was medically released in 2014 with a complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I breached universality of service, which necessitated my release from the Canadian Armed Forces. You know, along with medical release, I have a lot of benefits and therapies that are available to me, and I've certainly have taken advantage of a lot of them. Unfortunately, the military's stance on cannabis and on psilocybin and on all of these other types of natural medications is definitely they're opposed. So it's a little bit high-handed now that I'm out of the military and I get my box of government-provided cannabis in the mail every day at my door, when I would have been shown the door and ending my career if I would have been using medical cannabis at the time that I was serving, which I did, just FYI. Like, I was doing this before it was legal. I educated myself and my friends and others, and I've been a medical cannabis educator with CannaConnect. At least recently, I left that that position for at least a decade, helping other veterans, emergency first responders, RCMP, corrections, try to medicate more effectively with medical cannabis than they're currently. Because I don't know about, you know, y'all, but me, I was on a combat cocktail as long as my arm. And the medications that they provide in the military are meant to keep you highly medicated, sedated, and quiet, and do your job. It's not about healing. It's not about real science or about your general well-being. So I took things into my own hands, and I started growing high-quality medical cannabis, got my seeds from Amsterdam, started doing outdoor grow-ups, growing trees, averaging a pound a plant. Like, it was crazy how fast the knowledge base, it was like a sharp learning curve, but I would say I'm quite knowledgeable medicine as cannabis as a medicine. And I've took myself off of all the medications, so I'm going to give you a list. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask. So when you sort of retired or discharged from the military, how long ago was that? And they still sort of kept the ideal of this, the medication we're giving you is to keep boots on the ground as opposed to healing. Do you think between now and then they've changed their perspective a little bit onto how they're choosing to interact with their veterans, specifically ones with PTSD?
I think that they don't have any choice because it's now legal, but to support a veteran's choice of natural homeopathic medicine versus pharmaceutical medication. They don't have a choice. Now, when it comes to serving members, they have a choice. And the response to recreational cannabis and medical cannabis, because they haven't changed their stance on medical cannabis, which is they're completely opposed. If you have a prescription for medical cannabis that you need it, you know, they will show you the door. You'll be medically released. Recreational, you're allowed to use it, but only on your off hours and only a certain amount of hours, like bottle to throttle type of mentality. Yeah. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. So none of the rules are based on any kind of science or reality whatsoever. So, and I've challenged some of the higher ups. Like, I've talked to Colonel Etienne Gauthier, and I said to him, "So your rules that you've put in are based on, are not really based on any science or well-being of the member at all." And he's like, "Well, what do you mean?" And I said, "Well, let's give an example. A guy has PTSD. He's come home. He's done a few tours, or she's done a few tours, and she's really struggling and she's really suffering, and maybe she's on, you know, light duties and she's going to therapy, he or she, you know, trying to get their stuff together. So if cannabis versus pharmaceutical medication could give that member a better quality of life than the pharmaceutical stuff, it doesn't matter. They're going to be white knuckling all day at work and forced to over-medicate when they get home because they've got all this extra cortisol built up in their bodies from white knuckling it all goddamn day long. I'm just trying to get through their day and their triggers and everything else when they could be taking something like a high CBD, CBG, you know, THCA microdose, you know, THC microdose so that they could manage their pain and their PTSD and their symptoms and process their trauma in their therapy instead of being completely zoned out and over-medicated and sedated just so that you can be smart enough to run the machines."
So out of curiosity then, you were talking about this pharmacological cocktail that you were on, and this is sort of like a standard across the board. You have sort of PTSD, you're a vet, here is this. This is a standard thing. Like, what kind of pharmaceutical compounds were in that?
Holy shit. So much. Hang on. Some of the, well, Ativan, lorazepam, as required. Anybody who understands what those two medications are and that they're giving it to me as required.
Well, yeah, it's a benzodiazepine and it's an as required.
I can take it as much as I want to whenever I feel I need it, and they'll refill it like candy.
Yeah, that's interesting. And considering how addictive it is too.
Oh, extremely addictive. Yeah. Hydromorphone, Oxycontin, like so many pain, Percocets. Right? So many pain medications, they just throw it at you like nothing. The latest, the newest antidepressants. Every few months I would change from one to another and they would give me additional medication so that I could deal with the side effects of the medication that they were giving me. Example, I go to them for depression and the antidepressants that they give me cause suicidal ideation. I didn't have a problem with suicidal ideation before taking the antidepressants that they were giving me. And I'm like, they were making me worse. All of these medications, they just compounded. And they were giving me something else to counteract the side effects of this brand new antidepressant. Because let me be fucking clear. The military is a large body of guinea pigs. Let's just take a look at mefloquine. That's just the latest recent iteration of, hey, we're guinea pigs. We're going to give you something that they know is a neurotoxin, something that they know mimics PTSD symptoms but can't be treated, something that causes suicidal ideation. So what's the benefit of the government for their soldiers to come home and start killing themselves?
It solves a problem that they don't have to deal
with. Track what I'm laying.
Yeah. Which, well, and that sort of ties in, like, we're going to segue a little bit, but that ties into radio.
Sorry.
No, that's totally cool. Like, we're discussing something that is relevant. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and it ties into the idea of you know, veterans with PTSD being offered MAID programs. Which, and for anyone who doesn't understand, MAID program is medically assisted dying, which,
I agree with. I know a few people who have been offered medically assisted suicide as a means of dealing, because the people who are on the other ends of the line, they say, oh, we're putting all these things together and all of these supports are in place. And when you call them, good luck, strap on, because you're in for a ride.
Well, and that seems
and sometimes a person at the other end of the line is a volunteer who's not a medical professional, who has a script, who's going to tell you what they need to know. And don't tell me that it's not on that script that they're going to offer you medically assisted suicide, because it solves their problem for them, like methoquine.
Because
it mimics PTSD, and they can blame it on the PTSD while these soldiers are dying after Afghanistan.
So I think it's safe to say that we've established that the Canadian military is not really offering much in the way of any sort of meaningful resource for veterans who are suffering from PTSD. I think that's if you read between the lines of the conversation thus far.
Everything that they're offering, let me be brutally clear, is a public relations ploy meant to give the public the perception that they're doing something about it, when in actuality, nothing could be further than the fucking truth.
Yeah, and I feel that it's sort of coming to light in the media in Canada right now, but again, it doesn't seem
internet.
To be gaining. Yeah, fair enough, on the internet. And so you've went from this pharmacopoeia of various types of medications that, you know, and again, to hydromorphone, opioids, benzodiazepines, all things that are dangerous and addictive. And then you went into cannabis. And then you, I remember we were talking, you said you got into sort of psilocybin as part of this. So how did psilocybin work for you? When you were you doing this by yourself? Were you doing it with groups or professionals or anything? Or is this more by myself, lock my doors, do a bunch of mushrooms and sort some shit out kind of thing?
Well, honestly, cannabis was just a natural, psilocybin was a natural extension of the cannabis. One I found lend itself to the other and really was the bridge to the other, you know? So I had a healthy understanding of cannabis as a medicine in all its different modalities. So then I started wondering about mushrooms, because in the veteran community, we start hearing a lot of things about, you know, these different types of, they call them experimental medications, but they've been medicine long before all this pharmaceutical crap. So I'm just going to say these ancient sacred medicines, because that's realistically how I see them. They are ancient, they are sacred, and that's how I use them, and that's how I really see them. So I started doing a little bit more research into my veteran community about how they've been being helped by psilocybin, because I reached a wall. I mean, that's what, I reached a wall, and my therapist said to me in writing, because it was meant for Veterans Affairs and that type of paperwork. So it wasn't meant for me. So it was really clinical and it was brutal and it was straight to the core. And says, I'm not going to get any better, you know? And I really hated that, because she was right. Based on what I was doing with the cannabis and with cognitive behavioral therapy, I was only going to be able to go so far. I hit a wall, and for years I've been stagnated at that level. And I thought, well, what the hell? Let's try psilocybin. And I did it on my own behind closed doors, and shh, don't fucking tell anybody. but I didn't do enough. I was doing what I would consider now more of a microdosing, and it wasn't enough. The cannabis medication was deadening the effects of the psilocybin, and I needed more of a heavy dose.
Sorry, what dose were you doing that you considered to be a microdose?
Like one gram.
Okay, fair enough.
No more than a gram of mushrooms at any one point. And because it kind of, the cannabis, because I take oils daily, it really deadened it a little bit. So it wasn't, there was some benefit, there was some laughter, there was some joy, there was some tears, there was some release, but it wasn't quite what I was looking for. It wasn't until after I finished the 16-week, the 16-week ketamine session in Toronto, that I took a healthier look at psilocybin. In my last psilocybin journey, I took 7 grams of like top shelf medical grade psilocybin, with someone else, both of us looking to journey with complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So I've been doing it once a month for the past few months at a therapeutic level, which I would consider 4 to 7 grams a therapeutic level.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pretty accurate statement. 4 to 7 grams seems to be around the idea of like you actually break down your ego. You're getting into yourself. You can't keep hiding from yourself, if that makes sense, at those doses.
Well, it's the shedding of all the external, like nothing, you know, that's not intrinsic has really any value when you're on that much psilocybin. You don't want to eat. You don't want to, it's not about the party at that point, because I don't use it recreationally. I use it therapeutically. So I want to go on a journey, and all of my ketamine and my psilocybins, I consider them vision quests. It's messages coming from me to me, and my divine energy telling me what I need to see and what I need to hear. And you have to be prepared to kind of take on that journey in those visions, because those visions don't mean anything if you don't have the knowledge behind them.
Yeah, you know? It's like a statement taken out of context. It doesn't have the same meaning to it.
It doesn't have any meaning.
Yeah. And it's...
What is that?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like,
what was that?
It is. It's, you know, it's funny how that, as you start going on, and I agree, like this journey, and you're going into a journey into yourself, that you, mm-hmm. you can do high doses at the very beginning, and it doesn't have the same meaning that it does as after you've moved down, and all of a sudden this puzzle piece becomes very, you know, aware of where it actually fits into this puzzle. And so, you know, you were doing gram doses, and it wasn't, you couldn't get past sort of the cannabis. Uh-huh. And then you started into ketamine. And this is what I find really interesting, because I don't want to say that I have a stigma against ketamine, but like, I remember like my experience with ketamine.
You can say you had a stigma against ketamine, because that's a beautiful way to start.
It is. So when I was doing ketamine, it was like back at, you know, the rave scene in Toronto in like 1999. And we would do, you know, Special K, and it was like, you know, horse tranquilizer, and you'd be doing it with MDMA at a rave. And it was this interesting experience. And then all of a sudden now, you know, like ketamine treatments have become, you know, very cutting edge. And they conveniently enough, they are an acceptable psychedelic experience. They're dissociative. And, you know, we were talking about this before you went to go do it. And I was really intrigued to hear what you had to say. And then you started telling me these stories, and like, I was getting goosebumps with some of them. So in whatever way that you feel this story needs to be told, do you want to kind of tell us about your ketamine treatments and how you work through that and what it kind of meant to you?
Yeah, it's ketamine took me from being afraid that my therapist is going to retire to, like, I just sent her an email today saying, you know, I really haven't felt a need for therapy, and I've just been kind of faking it. And can we, you know, make the next one the last one? Because I don't feel the pull and I don't feel the need. Ketamine was the result of getting the diagnosis from my psychotherapist saying that I'm not going to get any better. She doesn't expect me to improve past this certain point. And it was devastating.
But that's a terrifying statement, though.
Like, yeah.
You know, having your therapist be like, oh, you've just plateaued. You've hit a glass ceiling.
Well, it wasn't
this
meant
is
for me.
This is it's going to get. Well, you still read it. You know, it still passed through you. Like, shit.
It was brutal. It was meant for Veteran Affairs bureaucracy. So it cut right to the core. It cut right to the point without any flowery language. And it was something that I obviously needed to hear, because she was right. I obviously hadn't improved in years, and I wasn't going to improve based on what I was doing, because I'd plateaued. And so I needed something to break through that, but I didn't know what that was. I wasn't able to meditate and to put my mind into these different states, and I couldn't be alone with my thoughts, and I couldn't be still for a second. And my nervous system ran on high 24/7. So like I didn't know how to fix that. So ketamine was like a holy grail, like, fuck it, I'm going to go get high on the government dime. And that's exactly what I said to my therapist. And she laughed. And I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. I have no expectations. But I walked in there full of intention. I'm like, I need to fix this. And if I had to put what my major malfunction was in one little nut, it's fear. I lived with fear. Fear was palpable. I fucking taste it, yeah. You know, and that was my existence through my entire military career. You know, so I wasn't safe. Nobody was safe. That's the way it was. So I was like, I'm going to do this. I even asked my ex-husband to take me because you're in a very susceptible state after you take ketamine and you need somebody that you can trust. And he was the only person that I 100% implicitly trusted was my ex-husband. So I'm like, can you please take me to this clinic in Toronto 6 different times and take me home and babysit me? I don't know how I'm going to interact with it and I don't know what to expect, but my intention is I want to break through this barrier. I want to understand that fear, talk with it, sit with it, and so that I can live with it a little better than I've currently been living. So my first session was the most impactful. Every one of them are different, but there's 6 of them. And each session is followed by two-hour, at least for veterans. My understanding is a civilian sector doesn't get 2 hours because it's not covered and it's not cheap, right? There's a cost associated with it. So, but I opted for the whole Big Mac. Right? Yeah. So give me the whole thing. I'm in, let's do it. You know, all my chips are on the table. Let's go for it. And that's the intention that I walked in. And my first session, I met with a therapist, which is fantastic. And I said, okay, let's do it. And they gave me the smallest amount that they could. I think it was 250 mils as a microdose. And you take it in your mouth and you swish it in your mouth for like 15 minutes. And the setting is the most important thing with regards to ketamine therapy. When you're using it, Special K at a party, it is not the same as walking into a clinic, sitting into a leather chair that reclines you into a half moon, like you're being cradled like the world's biggest giant's lap, you know, like it's amazing. With sound and light and music and soft lighting and a beautiful setting with a therapist, right? So that if anything happens, you're there. There's also a nurse practitioner there, and they monitor all your vitals in case you have some sort of reaction to the medication. That's why they start you at the lowest dose. So when I start to go under, I spit out the medication. She tells you when you spit it out. You spit out the medication and they lean you back and you got this weighted blanket on you and you got these blindfolds on and you're tripping balls, right? Yeah. And the first time it was like there was, and I mean, excuse me, guys, it was a vag shaped opening and it just kind of and enveloped me in this beautiful light, right? Now I know that that's the eye. So respectfully, yeah. Turn your head. It's just, but for the first 4 sessions, she doesn't correct me. I just tell her what I see. And then in between, we have sessions and I think about what, and I write about it and I journal about it because the magic happens in between. It's after I get my visions from me to me. How do I feel? What do I experience? What did I see? What is the meaning that I associate with the images that I saw because the messages are from me to me, right? So you inherently trust the source. There's no therapist or other person that's, inputting their vibe, their want, their desire, their what they want out of it. It's completely all internal. Even the feeling of the tear running down my face briefly put me in my body, which pissed me off to no end. Because yeah. Like I was really enjoying where I was. It's incredibly pleasurable feeling. There was no mania, no depression. I felt safe. I felt balanced. And I was trying to describe this environment that I found myself in. It was pulsing and breathing, and I felt completely isolated and completely alone, but completely surrounded and completely safe. And it was my nervous system had never experienced that level of safety in my lifetime. And we'll get into that a little later, but so I'd never experienced that. So it didn't know. It's like, how do you know what an orgasm feels like unless you've had one? Yeah. So I didn't know. My nervous system had no idea what safe felt like. So when I came out of it, I was babbling, I'm sure, like an idiot. And I was telling her what I was feeling and thinking. And I'm like, am I in space? And I'm like, no. And I'm floating in water. And I'm like, no. And it wasn't until after, when I was journaling and I was saying, oh my God, like I'm in utero. As a first place, you know, maybe my brain took me to the last time where I felt safe.
Yeah.
Right? The first time my nervous system wasn't turned on. And to high, right? Like I was speaking English, my therapy was speaking English, you know, my brain was speaking English, but you know, my nervous system, like, no hables inglés. There was no lines of communication between the two. I could not therapize my way out of this state of mind. And it took one session and I was left with this state of contentment. And that has stayed with me since the first session. It was amazing, honestly.
Isn't it though? Like, you know, the idea of, you know, being in uterine in this place of absolute safety, whereas like you've never, you know, an in-uterine human, you know, a neonate, a fetus, whatever you want to refer to it as, like, you know, you've never actually had anything to traumatize you.
No.
You haven't been born, you haven't experienced, you haven't been hit or slapped or told something or been in a car accident. You know what I mean? Like it's such a beautiful idea, but I think people are so disassociated from it. And I remember you were telling me that, and I was like actually at work in the hospital parking lot, having this conversation, and you were telling me that. I remember just getting goosebumps because I feel like I've had similar experiences on high dose psilocybin of sort of this in uterine state where you just feel truly safe. And I don't think anyone can really understand what that means until they actually have that feeling or how impactful that could be. Because then you truly realize what you've become. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's contrast. Like I had an internal barometer that was installed. Like, I mean, I'm an ex-mechanic, so let me use terms that I can understand.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like I had a thermometer, a barometer that was put into there to someone, okay, this is hot, this is cold, this is safe, this is danger. Because without that baseline, I wasn't able to identify when I wasn't in danger.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah, completely. It's just that you're always at this point where you're in danger. There's no
difference. I was always in danger.
Yeah. And so that was just the first ketamine experience.
Yeah.
You had five more of them. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. There was like five more. The second session, if I could get into that one. The second session, I labeled the tapestry of life. And I don't know if you know how tapestries are put together. Like I've been to Rome and the Vatican and, you know, and I've seen all these beautiful intricate tapestries. So my brain had all these lovely images to draw from, right? So, but the message was connection is I am part of that tapestry, even though I don't realize I am a thread, because the sense of isolation that happens in these mental health issues is you isolate. You feel very much alone and no one else understands and you can't get better. And you feel very much alone, that you're not part of the world. You're very separate and apart. And in the tapestry, I became part of the tapestry in my visions. So as I pulled up close, all I would see was the dappled sunlight and the little strands of thread all around me, that as I became a part of it. And as I pulled away from it, like a piece of art, it looks like nothing when you're too close. Mm. And as you pull away, you see all the beautiful tapestry. And what I saw was the tapestry of my life and how I was interacting with each little piece of thread, even though I didn't know it, that now I can intrinsically feel it. My nervous system now understands what it feels like. I am part and connected to this divine energy, to all of these other human beings whose lives that I touch, whose lives touch me. And it's all part of this beautiful, intricate tapestry. And I don't have to know what all the threads are for.
That was like I gotta be honest with you, that was a beautiful explanation. That's powerful.
You know, impactful. Each one is so different. And my therapist is like, I think you're called to this medicine. And I believe I was called. I believe like a witch of olden days, I was called to this medicine, to this natural medicine. you know, to cannabis first, to psilocybin, to ketamine, you know, and now I'm exploring further with psychedelic assisted psychotherapy because I want to educate myself and be that person to guide other people through their journeys, and help them understand what comes from them to them, so that because you're the best person to determine what's best for your life. But when life throws all these things at you to confuse you and you don't trust yourself anymore, this broke all that down. I am not what happened to me. I am a beautiful being of light.
You know, that's such a perfect statement, as I am not what happened to me. And I think that that's like so deeply important. And such things, something that's so easily said, but so hard to internalize. You know what I mean? I don't think people realize how shitty we are to ourselves and how much that we hold inside and just squeal like, I cannot let go of this. Like, you know, and it's amazing. Like, you know, that was like your second session on ketamine. Like,
that was number two. Fuck. Right. And number two, at the end of the session, there was some dark and my fear took over. And I was afraid of the dark. And they had upped me 100 milligrams for my second session. And it took me to the dark near the end. And I legit took myself out of it. I took control of it. And I took myself out of it. And I took the headphones and the eye mask off. And I took control of the session. And I took myself out of the state of mind that I was in. I was able to completely control it. Like I said, my therapist was a little surprised that... Mm. I was called to this medicine. She feels I have a gift for it. But again, babbling afterwards, it wasn't until after I reflected upon the visions that came to me that I understood the meaning behind the visions. This is from me to me. I'm the best person to determine what's wrong, what needs fixed, what I need to look at. It was just dark. It was everything at first was that dappled sunlight and the tapestry, and then it was just dark. And I didn't want to explore it. So I made the decision to take myself out, and I did. And in the third session, that's where my therapist said to me, don't look away. Lean in. When you see the darkness coming in and you feel the fear, you're confident now that you're in a safe space. You know that you can take control of the medicine when you need to, not the other way around. So if you need to come out, you can. You should lean the fuck in. Lean in. So I said, okay, fine. And the next time I see the dark, like I'm going to lean in. And after that session, I went to New Brunswick. There was a lot of trauma in New Brunswick. I'll get into that later, but I went there and none of that stuff stuck to me. So I was doing things in between these sessions. I was doing things that would normally create a certain reaction, automatic reaction, you know, the fight, flees, fawn, you know, reaction in your body. And these things weren't happening. You know, I would still get a trigger, but I was able to process it and then I was able to move on. You know, I'll give you an example. I went to the gym, and at the gym, my goals are to reintegrate myself into the gym and to live a healthier lifestyle. I want to get back into the gym. And the smell of male sweat and alcohol is very triggering for me. So going to the gym has not been a good space. So I hired a personal trainer, and he's this giant redheaded man who's like, looks like he'd swash you. But this giant dude, he's my personal trainer, and he walks me through the gym like he's my bodyguard, and we go to our space and we do our workout, and he's helping me get comfortable with the gym, but he's also helping me to feel safe in that space. He's wonderful. Now, nobody talks to me or approaches me in the gym because that's just not my routine. When you interrupt my routine, I can get triggered. So the owner of the gym, and I didn't know it was the owner of the gym, this is very imperative to know to this story, approached me because I wasn't paying the door fee because someone else had done that for me because I wasn't able to do that because I have a lot of cognitive issues that haven't been resolved, right? So because I wasn't able to do that, someone else did it for me. So he didn't know that. He didn't know me. I didn't know who the hell this man was. So he approaches me at the gym in a very assertive fashion, comes right at me, And I'm looking around and my brain's in a fog, complete PTSD fog. And I'm looking for whatever I can clobber him with, or the nearest exit, or who do I have to get through to get a wave between this person and myself. And I'm in high fight, flight, you know, trigger mode. And I say, listen, I'm leaving. And I just left. And my trainer's like, where are you going? What happened? And so I texted him and I said, I don't know who the fuck that guy is, but he needs to, like, you know, stay away from me. and gesture his approach to his clientele. I don't know who this person is. And I'll be back. Now, pre-ketamine, I wouldn't have come back. Like, I would not have gone back to the gym. That would have been the end of it. Post-ketamine, I went back and I sat with that individual, and he had a seat in his office so that we could talk, because I arranged for this meeting, and he went to sit down and I sat in the seat that he provided because for himself, because it was closest to the fucking door. So I'm like, I'm going to sit in this seat, and he sat over there, and I'm like, listen, this is, and I laid it out and I was able to verbalize that, and there was no triggers happening before there would have been triggers associated to this person and to this place and to this time. And after two sessions of ketamine, that didn't happen. I was able to articulate it and talk to him and then go to my, do my workout and then go back. And I'm still seeing Tim at the gym, you know, and I'm able to continue to do that. And that was two sessions in. So it was very intense 16-week psychedelic assisted psychotherapy at the field trip clinic in Toronto. Worth the doing. Worth the doing. Let me tell you about session number three.
Yeah, please.
Session number three, I walked in there and there was already a little resistance because she told me to let go in the dark, and I was expecting the dark. Right?
Yeah.
So they gave me a good dose. Because my last dose was 750, which I think is the largest they're legally amount to give to anybody. So it was quite high, quite quickly, but I tolerated it quite well. So there was a little dark, a little resistance, let go, and I verbalized that I was entering the hell realm. That's what she heard me say. And I'm like, okay, I'm entering the hell realm. Let's fucking do this. Right? Lean in. She told me to lean in. I had a complete out-of-body experience. I completely was out of my body. I was in the most incredible CGI environment that you could possibly have imagined, and I met my spirit animal in the dark. And it was an elephant.
Good choice.
And there was the sound of drums, and the reason that the elephant is so impactful is because the elephant is the largest creature on the planet with no natural predators. Do you know what it feels like to be the largest thing on the planet with no natural predators?
Not
I do.
Specifically, yeah.
I know exactly what that feels like.
That's actually really amazing.
I know exactly what it feels like to strike those feet on the ground, to feel it shake, to be completely confident and completely safe, to know exactly what it feels like to be the most powerful thing on the planet with no natural predators. I know what that feels like. My nervous system understands what that feels like. And again, you can't therapize your way right. of understanding yeah. what something like that feels like.
That's know? Like deeply empowering. Like just becoming an elephant in every aspect of what that means, like embodying the feeling, you know, it's stomping the ground,
shaking. The swaying.
Bones. Yeah.
Just the swaying of that big weight, you know, the gentleness of it, the power of it. It was incredible.
That's awesome, actually.
You know? So I was able to connect with that. So all of these lessons up to number three were teaching my nervous system what my therapy wasn't able to teach me. Because, you know, no hables inglés.
Yeah.
Whatever lines of communication had been severed. you know, at a very young age, and I wasn't able to communicate to my nervous system. So it just ran on hot, right? All the time. So my fourth session, it was clarity. It was just beauty. It was everything I'd seen in the Vatican, and every mosaic and every tapestry and every beautiful piece of art and piece of marble. And it was just incredible beauty, you know, step back and see things clearly, because there's a lot of beauty here, you know. Yeah. It's not all ugly.
No.
You know, my nervous system would tell me the opposite. No, the world is a horrible place and you're never going to be safe.
It's almost like, you know? It seems like you're undoing an entire lifetime of trauma, and just, you know, your entire cognitive capacity is just moved towards seeing things through a lens of fear and everything's a threat. And then being able to sort of like unwind that and then view things with, like you say, clarity from a place of safety, from a place of empowerment.
Oh yeah. Feeling like the most powerful thing. Yeah. It's the most beautiful thing. Session number five was kind of funny. Session number five, I came out of it and I threw my stuff off, like the eye mask and the headphones, and I screamed at my therapist, "I am the captain." And she was like, "Okay, we can talk about that." And what it was I was in the CGI environment, a beautiful, incredible CGI environment. And I had this bubble that went all the way around me, that protected me from everything that was external, this external environment, external to me. And the session five was about, what does autonomy feel like? What does it feel like to be autonomous when you've never had autonomy over your own body? Hmm. Right? When you've lived your entire life in uniform, where you've not been safe and you've never had autonomy over your own body. What does it feel like? Right? So session five, and again, I had no expectations with any of these. I walked in with intention. All of this came to me from me, you know? So in my session five was, I am the captain. I steer the ship in the direction I want. I let whatever I want in, and I can kick out whatever I want out. It was about, what does autonomy feel like? What direction do you want to go in? I would have to just turn my eyes to the left, to the right, backwards. I could fly. I could go around backwards and turn into somersaults and swim through this beautiful, magical environment that couldn't fucking touch me in any kind of way. Right? So what does autonomy feel like? And that's what it felt like. And I couldn't explain to myself what that feels like. You know?
Yeah.
So that was my session five. That was crazy. And then I started reading about the eye, because the eye came to me for each session, like every session. As soon as I went under the influence of ketamine, my third eye would open and it would be enveloped into this beautiful divine energy, where things would come from me to me, which would erase all these things that I believed about the world around me and about myself. And it just erased it, you know, like, no, you are not, like, everything that's in you, that's coming from you, is absolutely beautiful and powerful and autonomy and all of it. And I couldn't explain to myself what any of those things felt like. And no matter how much, and I've been in therapy for years, you know, and no matter how much I could tell myself these things, I couldn't explain it to my nervous system. There wasn't the lines of communication to be able to explain that. Right? So I was just this hot mess. Session number six, I got asked by my therapist, what's your intention for this? And I said, I need some final moment of clarity, you know, a final piece of the puzzle. This is my last and sixth session, although I have the ability to come back and do some top-ups if I want to. This is my last official journey on ketamine at this clinic. So I said what I wanted was that last little piece of the puzzle. that will tie all of those little pieces that I've been collecting in sessions 1 through 5. I want something to tie it all together. That was my intention when I walked in. Holy shit, did I ever get it. I took 750 milligrams of ketamine, and it was in 4 little capsules. Like, my mouth was full, like foaming, like I had rabies. And you have to keep it in your mouth and swish it for 15 minutes. And I was already going under, and I could swallow it a little bit because there was so much in my system. And I spit it out, and she leaned the chair back, like it's automatically like a little button, and you lean back into this cradled position. And I had a complete out-of-body experience, but it was different. Different in that, what does it feel like when you're a child and an infant and you're thrown into the air by your father or your mother or your loved one, and there's absolutely zero fear of not being caught, of not a falling, of breaking a leg or smashing your head off the pavement. You know, that feeling of being completely fearless, right? What does that feel like? I know what that feels like, you know, of being launched off into a roller coaster. At the very top of the roller coaster, you know, you go down to the bottom, but then you go all the way up to the top and you're just launched. And there is no down, and there's no fear, and there's no safety net, and there's no thinking about a safety net, and there's no thinking about a downward trajectory, and there is no gut-wrenching downward trajectory and that fall, because that's what's exciting about a roller coaster. But what if you don't ever fall? What if you fly on and you just keep flying, right? And you don't care or worry about falling? That's what fearless really feels like, right? That's what I got for my last session, for my intentions. That was the last piece of the puzzle, was here you go. Here's what fearless feels like.
Right? Like, it almost seems like it took everything and just slowly maneuvered you to this place so that you could experience absolute freedom.
Yeah, but it was me.
Yeah.
I knew what I needed to see. I knew what I needed to experience. There's not a therapist out there who could get inside my mind. Think about like Star Trek and those therapists that could like touch your forehead.
Yeah, and telepathically like, get inside and analyze what specifically you need.
That's what happens on ketamine. But you're doing it to yourself.
Yeah, like I've always said too, like, you know, psychedelics is on higher dose anyways, is that you're playing the role of both the patient and the therapist. And what better person to be providing you with therapy than you yourself? You know what I mean? Like, you can spend like 50 years trying to get to know someone and really only scratch the surface. You know, I mean, I don't think people realize how profoundly complex we all are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how deeply intricate and how intertwined, and every single experience we've ever had all plays into this tapestry, like you say. You know what I mean? It's profoundly
complicated. We are the best person to determine what we need.
Yeah.
But if we have all this interference, like all this trauma that interferes with your thought process and interferes with your nervous system, you can't get to that point. I couldn't get over that hurdle. That was a 16-foot wall, and I didn't have my brothers around the other side to haul my ass over. It was just me. I could never get over that wall. I was never going to get over that wall. And I would still be in therapy now, instead of telling my therapist, hey, listen, let's make our last session the last session, because like, I haven't needed to be in therapy. I haven't felt the need to be in therapy, and I've been in therapy for a decade. Prior to ketamine, and this is like last September, I was panicked because my therapist told me she was going to be, you know, retiring in May, and I'm like, what am I going to do without you?
Yeah.
My service dog died in the middle of the pandemic. I was one of those people. I couldn't navigate the world and feel safe in it. Never. Ever.
So you went from being told or inadvertently reading something that said,
yes, inadvertently reading,
you will never, ever get better. This is the glass ceiling in which you are bumping up against. And then 6 ketamine treatments later, you know, you yourself have literally unraveled your entire complexity to a point where, you know, we're having this conversation. So like, how do you feel now, comparatively speaking?
Well, I can tell you what's changed. You know, I'm content, and content is a beautiful state to be in. There's no depression. There's no mania. Do I get sad? Yep. Do I get really, really excited? Absolutely. But it's not a depressive or a manic state. There's a big difference. It's a balanced state. You know, when that guy triggered me at the gym, I was able to balance and come back. And that experience wasn't stuck to me like a red wine stain on a white blouse or gum in my hair. You know, I was able to just let it go and go back to that barometer that I have, that thermometer in my chest that says, okay, you're safe now, you're fine. You know, I have not had a single panic attack of significance. I've been triggered, but I've not had a single panic attack of significance. My reaction is very different. You know, they're shorter term, and then I'm right back to that balanced state, that equilibrium that I've managed to discover in myself, right? I've never been so introspective. I can quiet my mind with the right setting without ketamine. Without ketamine, I can put my brain into a theta state, you know, because I know what that feels like. So now I know how to get there, right? I haven't had a single intrusive dream, right? Now, the cannabis would help quell those nightmares, but I've had chronic nightmares my whole life. I haven't had a single intrusive dream since my first ketamine session. I've not had a desire to drink or soothe with self-destructive behaviors. And when I say drink, I don't want to leave everybody to think that I'm an alcoholic, because I wasn't. I was an equal opportunity substance abuser.
No, trust me, I'm all over that. I went down that road for quite some time. You're like, have a beer with you? Yeah, I'll have six. You know what I mean?
I don't need 12. To, let's do it.
Might as well do it right.
You know, I don't have the desire to, because I don't have the need to, because I don't have anything to soothe. Now, what hasn't changed? All right. Cognitive issues associated with my CPTSD, my memory deficit, my concentration deficit, all of those things have not changed. But everything else has.
Right.
So,
you know, there's one thing that about like your whole story and how that you're projecting it that I think is really important is the idea that I feel like in our society, everyone, it's the pursuit of happiness. Wherein I think that's really dangerous, because contentment is where we really all should end up. You know, and the idea that I can never be anxious, I can never be sad, I'm like, that's the human experience. It's finding balance.
It's an unrecognizable goal.
Yeah. And it's dangerous too. When you set yourself goals that are completely unattainable, then you're never ever going to get someplace, and you end up constantly trying to reiterate why you're not getting there. And it's funny that you say contentment, because like I'm 100% about contentment. You know, perpetual bliss is not something that we can experience. And if we had that, you know, it would just by absence of contrast become meaningless. You know what I mean? Like,
you got to have the roller coaster in life. You got to have the ups and the downs and the thrills and the lows and the highs. And there's a song. There's a song that, it's just, I hear it every day in my head. And this little child that was singing, a little boy. And he says, don't be too high and mighty, because tomorrow you might fall down on your face.
Yeah.
So thank you for sunshine, and thank you for rain, and thank you for joy, and thank you for pain, and it's a beautiful day.
Right. I know. I've heard that before. Yeah. Trinix does a remix of it, actually. It's fantastic. It's like, I think I heard that like a couple months ago, and I'm like, I like that. It is really. Like, it's, yeah. You have to have sadness. You have to have pain, or else happiness is meaningless. It's just the too much of either one puts you in these weird aberrancies to equilibrium. And so, okay, so you've had these, and now you're in this place of contentment, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And so you were talking about how your psilocybin experiences now are different.
Yeah. I've kicked it up a notch. I have a healthy respect for the medication and for sacred medicine. And I've my circle has been growing with people who are more in line with my core values of natural medicine versus pharmaceutical medication, which I'm deeply against. I believe in the natural world, and I believe our food is our medicine, and a whole host of other things, but that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I agree with you about that.
I'm sorry. I lost track of where I was. Where was I?
Oh, yeah. We were talking about sort of your psilocybin.
Psilocybin. Yeah. Thank you. So I was taking a gram or two here or there, and more recreationally, not really having a lot of respect for the medication as a sacred medicine, and not understanding it at all. So, you know, after my ketamine, it led me to be a little more serious about psilocybin in the way that I've been serious about cannabis. Learning about turkey tail mushrooms and how I don't know why people who have cancer aren't taking them, and all kinds of other things. Like learning about how they're magical, sacred, and medicine, and how people have throughout the centuries in all recorded history used it as a way to connect with each other, connect with that divine energy, connect with yourself, you know, let go the shedding of all that external ego and bullshit that we all carry around with us, and a shedding of all of that, and a real clear vision of the world around you. I think it doesn't skew my view of the world. I think it clears my view of the world. It gives me a more clear view of the world. And the last few sessions I've had have been different. They've all been with other people, with people who are more in line with that. They want to experience a vision quest. You know, they want to see what they have for themselves, and they want to touch that divine energy. They want to get into that state of mindset, which really with mushrooms for me is the best way to get into that mindset. I wish I could take it a lot more. I'm so sorry that I really hate the fact that you have such a tolerance and I have to wait a month, you know, in order for me to be able to take a decent amount and get the therapeutic amount that I'm looking for.
Really?
And what I mean by a therapeutic amount is like about 7 grams, 5 to 7 grams.
Yeah.
And I wait a month because I really want to have the full effects. And I don't know if it's because I take cannabis as a medication that is deadening some of the effects that I need to wait that long. I don't know. But for myself, I wait a month. And every time it works. and I have a beautiful experience. And psilocybin, after I take psilocybin and after I'm done with the psilocybin journey, just like with the ketamine journey, it's in the in-between spaces that the magic happens. You know?
Well, yeah. And in doing 7 grams of mushrooms, like, you know, having a month to unpack to me is just sound logic. Like, I remember doing high doses, like 15, 20 grams, like every weekend for a couple months. And I think I got to a point where I'm like, I'm losing touch with reality.
You have to take that 15, 20 grams, right? Because you're taking it every weekend.
Yeah. Although, generally speaking, it's interesting because usually it's 3 to 4 days for the sensitivity to sort of like come down. I do sometimes wonder if maybe the cannabis is prolonging that sensitivity. That's an interesting, perhaps, interaction that's occurring.
I think it's about 3 weeks I've been experimenting with it.
Yeah. No, you're like, so you got this like right now perfectly.
Yeah. And I have a good supply of high grade medical mushrooms from a veteran who grows them specifically for that purpose. And I'm building a space here in Kingston for people to be able to come to have a psilocybin journey. So that they can come and safely experience that.
See, and that's another thing too, is that, you know, because it's still illegal, it's still a Schedule 3, you know, but that's going to change hopefully sometime in the near future. And the special access program is seemingly grinding along in the ridiculous bureaucracy that as it does. But yeah, like, you know.
Well, we know why that is, right?
Well, of course we do. Yeah.
It's like the lotto with cannabis. They just want to try to get a monopoly on it.
Yeah, they want to see how much money they can make. And fair enough. But I do really appreciate the fact that you've, you know, experienced these deeply profound experiences. And even what you're talking about with ketamine, man, shit, that's incredible. Like, you know, having those type of experiences, those are like level four psychedelic experiences. And that's incredible. Like disassociating from what we perceive as reality and perhaps into what reality really is. You know what I mean? Like it's...
Well, I'm a mechanic. So I'm going to talk to you in terms I can understand. If I take a multimeter and I put it between my fingers, I generate 1.6 volts of electricity approximately. Right? So my it's not my body. Because when I die... When I die, you know, when my corporeal being is dead, you know, and I no longer generate that electricity. So science tells me that, you know, energy never dies. And I know this to be true. I trust the science. So if energy never dies and we are energy, what I'm tapping into is a divine energy that we are all connected to. And I believe that, honestly. With all of my being, I feel very sacred about all these medicines and these journeys that I've been on, and they've been life-altering. Pharmaceutical medications, in my opinion, at least from my experience, the combat flipping cocktail that they seem to put us on is to disconnect us from ourselves, not to connect us with ourselves. So the very opposite is happening. We're being further and further disconnected from our true selves, from our divine energy, from each other, from others, and being further isolated. I think all these medications are meant to connect us. And I honestly don't think that's what bureaucracies want, is all of us to be connected.
Well, and again, you know what I mean? Like the war on drugs, even if you want to go back to like theocracy.
That's the crime against humanity right there.
Like
prohibition against cannabis is then now always should be looked at as a crime against humanity.
Yeah, I don't even disagree with you. And one thing that I want to say, too, about when you were talking about this connection to divine energy and all this other stuff, for any of our viewers who are like, I don't believe that, or that's silly, or something like that, then go do some ketamine. Go do 15, 20 grams of mushrooms. You know, the one thing that always blows my mind is, you know, religion asks for blind faith. Psychedelics will give it to you if you want it. You know, for anyone who says, well, I don't think that's just a hallucination. There's no meaning behind it. There's no such thing. It's like, well, then go do 15 grams of mushrooms. Go do some 5-MeO-DMT. And until you've had that experience, then, you know, no one's asking you to blindly believe in something. It's providing you with anecdote from people who've had the experience that is reproducible. You know what I mean? Like it is. It's entirely reasonable.
I'm helping others with it. I help others with cannabis. I help others with psilocybin. I am encouraging anybody who has PTSD or complex post-traumatic stress disorder that's been hard to treat. You got nothing to lose.
Well, and considering the fact that you were told that you were at a glass ceiling and that there was no place to go, and then all of a sudden we're sitting there having this conversation where you're not even seeing that person anymore. You know what I mean?
I am not the same person.
No. And, and it's amazing, that complete unraveling of oneself. And
well, yeah, what I wanted to add to that, if I could, if we have time, I don't keep track of time.
No, it's so all good. We are sort of getting to like the tail end of this. We try and keep it at a certain time, but please continue.
So what I wanted to say about it is that cannabis prepared the way, prepared the path for me for ketamine. Ketamine prepared the way for me for psilocybin, to take it seriously at the very least. And all of these together have really cut through. The ketamine cut through. Let me go back. Cannabis helped me to manage my symptoms and my symptomology. Ketamine cut through the generational trauma. And when I say generational trauma, I mean my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, is a Maliseet native, straight off the reservation, right into the residential schools. And I'm an actual extension of that, where I ended up in foster care. I was in group homes after that, and then I was homeless, and like I found the military and I was institutionalized. Yeah. It was just one after another. So like I had generational trauma that I had to work through. The ketamine not only cut through the abuse I endured in the ranks in the military, because let's face it, I was bred and I was groomed to be the perfect victim inside a male-dominated environment. So it wasn't that I think all the men are terrible, because let me put it to you out there, I have men in the military that I've loved with all my heart, and I would lay down my life for them, and they would lay down their life for me. But if at 1,000 men in a room, there was 100, you know, predators, they love me. They're going to go after me, because I gave off that... that signal, right? I hadn't been in therapy. I hadn't dealt with those things. And I was still giving off those no boundaries, you know, I'm open for you to be able to abuse me. Because I hadn't dealt with any of that. You know, even though I'd been in therapy, I'd never been able to work it out, sort it out, and get on top of it and build a bridge and get the fuck over it.
Yeah.
And ketamine cut through all of it, down to my core self, so I could see myself for what I really was. And I am not what happened to me, and I'm not what I had to do to survive those environments. I am a beautiful being of light, and I am full of divine energy, you know?
Yeah. Dude, that's awesome. And then the idea, I love that. It's like, I am not what has happened to me.
No.
You know, and I think that that's a really important thing for people to take from this, is that you're not what has happened to you.
People are suffering because they're carrying the baggage around with them of all the things that have happened to them and all the lies that they've been told about themselves and all the trauma. You know, they carry that around with them.
Yeah, and it's heavy.
Psychedelics help me unpack it all and leave it all behind. I still acknowledge and recognize the pharmaceutical medications. I wasn't able to process one iota of my trauma. It did the opposite. It deconnected me from myself so that I wasn't able to process the trauma. Right? It did the opposite. These natural psychedelics and homeopathic medications connected me with my true self. I am not what I did to survive. You know?
Man, that's fantastic. You know, honestly, like we have to end it here. You haven't heard from Jason at all.
Jason's like, shut the fuck up.
He hasn't said a word. Jason just sitting over there nodding his head.
Are you still there?
I am still here. I just don't like to interject when the flow is going as well as it has been. So I mean, honestly, thank you for a descriptive and informative podcast for
our listeners. And it was like really deeply vulnerable too. And I think that's really important about this, because that's, to me, a huge part of psychedelics is vulnerability, is being vulnerable to yourself. And that shit is terrifying.
Fucking terrifying.
Yeah, man.
I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. I thought the opening of my third eye was a vag. Like, honestly.
Fair enough. And you're talking about in uterine, really. Like, if you want to go back to the uterus, there's only a handful of ways to get there. Let's be real.
Only one in, way out.
Spiritual C-section. I'm not sure if those exist, but, you know.
You know, but yeah, it was a beautiful experience. I'm really grateful. Thank you, Adam and Jason, for the opportunity to come and talk about it. I'm hoping, honestly, that other people change their mind like you have about psychedelic assisted psychotherapy and ketamine. It changed my life. And so far it's been long lasting. I've had no relapse. I am forever changed, because my nervous system knows who the fuck I am.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm not all this crap that I carry around with me.
Now, Sherry, do you have an idea? This might be a little cart before the horse kind of a question here, but a rough estimate as to when you'll have your facility open to have people come in and perform psilocybin
therapies?
Yeah,
it's going to be open this summer.
Oh, perfect.
I'm starting the renovations in the spring. The space is already built. We just have to renovate it and retrofit it with a kitchen and a bathroom facility. So I'm just going through the permit process to get that into place. We'll be able to host 6 to 12 people at the most. We'll have a couple guides here on site, so that we'll, you know, who won't be participating in the psilocybin journey, just so that people can have their own journeys. So give them autonomy to be able to have their own journey.
So would this be like a word of mouth thing within your own community, or is this like a webpage?
NUMA clinic that is opened here in Kingston. Let me give you a moment to give them a little, you know, shout out. And they're going to be having open houses this year very soon. And that's exactly what they're all about. I'm going to basically be here, you know, if their clientele want to come and have a journey, this will be a place that they'll be able to do that.
I think once you have that facility up and running, we'd love to have you back on the show again, just to kind of discuss what that's kind of looked like, some of the challenges and the successes that you've had with it. Because I think it's you know, you're kind of a pioneer in that space, and it'd be really good to discuss that at that point in time. So,
well, and
yeah, I've always been a bit of an advocate. Yeah. I've always been that girl.
Well, and on top of that too, is that, you know, you have literally unpacked, you know what I mean? Like I have this huge point of contention with people who are facilitators that have never done any work. You know, it like went with psychedelics, and they just, well, I read a book, or I read Terrence McKenna, The Doors of Perception, so therefore I can empathize with his experience. And like, no, you can't. And so I think that's amazing. Thank you for coming on the show. And that was, yeah, that was a really powerful conversation that you just very much beautifully articulated. So thank you
for having me.
Yeah, no. And we'll talk soon, as we do.
Yeah.
And yeah. So thank you very much. And I look forward to speaking with you again.
Look forward to seeing you again, Adam.